iHeart Podcasts.
Guess what, Will?
What's that, Mango?
So, you know Carhartt, right? Like the pants company?
The pants guy. I think they do more than just pants, right? Like all kinds of clothing. But yeah, I know the company.
Yeah. So I think of them as this sort of workman brand. And I was looking up the business. It is fascinating. So Carhartt was founded in Detroit in the late 1800s by this guy named Hamilton Carhartt. He launched his clothing brand with just two sewing machines and five employees. But as his business grew, he really got enamored with this whole startup scene in Detroit. And in 1910, he actually started manufacturing cars under the Carhartt brand.
How in the world do you go from making like pants and stuff like that to making cars? So they actually made cars?
Yeah, but the weirdest part is that the vehicles weren't made for the same audience as his clothing. Like the company had this showroom at the Plaza Hotel in New York City, which is so fancy. And they really set out to appeal to the aristocracy. So when fancy dignitaries or royalty came from abroad, like Carhartt cars were actually sent to meet them at the pier and escort them to the hotel.
Why have I not heard this before?
I know, I was thinking the same thing, but the company only made a few models. And in 1912, business was so bad that Hamilton decided to close it up. But, you know, according to the Automotive Hall of Fame, less than 500 Carhartt cars were built in total, and none are known to exist today. None. But that's just the first of nine great stories we've got about cars today. Let's dig in.
Hey there, podcast listeners. Welcome to Part-Time Genius. I'm Will Pearson, and as always, I'm joined by my good friend Mangesh Hattikader. And sitting behind the soundproof glass, reading the golden book he got off of eBay. It's called, Tristan, flash it over here. It's called Herbie Gets a Special Friend. And man, he is truly invested in this book. He's been reading this thing for hours now. That's our friend and producer, Tristan McNeil.
I love that it takes him hours to read a golden book. But speaking of Herbie, did you actually watch those movies growing up?
I mean, I might have watched them. I have to be honest. I remember kind of a little bit about them, but not that much. I don't remember that much about them.
So I do remember watching them and loving them. And, you know, we're always looking for the kind of classic Disney movies for movie night with our kids. And for some reason, Henry and Ruby refused to watch it. And it kills me. I mean, I think that they only have like enough love for Cars from the movie Cars
right
in their hearts. But, you know, that didn't stop me from looking up a fact about the movie for this episode. So did you know that the VW Bug wasn't actually the initial choice to be Herbie?
I mean, it seems like the obvious choice because it actually looks like it has a face, but no, I wasn't aware of that.
So that's what I was thinking too, and I just assumed the movie was written with the Volkswagen Beetle in mind, but apparently the cars had to audition for the role, and according to the LA Times, about a dozen cars, including Toyotas, Volvos, MGs, Fiats, and a pearl white Beetle auditioned for the role of Herbie. So apparently the crew came by, they kicked the tires, they checked out the steering and test drove the models. But when they walked up to Herbie, they actually couldn't help but pat and stroke the parked bug. Like, that's how the decision was made. They just fell in love with the thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, we grew up with a white boxy Volvo. That was our family car for like 17 or 18 years. And I am curious, like, if a Volvo had been in that starring role and had gone bananas and gone to Monte Carlo, like if people would have embraced the movies with the same vigor.
Maybe so. Well, I mean, I know Herbie was obviously a car who got by on his charm, but I've actually got a story about a car that's basically the opposite. Now, that was James Dean's Porsche, which also went by the nickname Little Bastard. And boy, did it earn this nickname. So after Dean died in an accident in it, it was sold for its parts. And basically, it sounds like the car revolted against this. According to a Mental Floss article, it fell and crushed a mechanic's legs. And then here, I'm actually just going to quote the piece because it's pretty ridiculous. So it says, a doctor who bought the engine was killed in a car accident. Another victim who bought the transmission was severely injured in a crash. The tire sold from Little Bastard blew out simultaneously, injuring the buyer.
What?
While the shell of the car was being transported, the truck carrying it crashed. Thieves were injured trying to steal the car. The car was even lended to a highway safety exhibit in which the garage that housed the car burned down in a fire. Like, you can't make this stuff up. And of course, now the location of the car is completely unknown. I guess nobody wants to know that they would have any part of this.
I love the idea that this car is like so gangster.
Yeah.
And it also feels like, you know, it's just hiding out on a beach with Elvis and Tupac, kind of drinking and telling war stories.
Totally what it's doing.
You know, our wonderful researcher, Eves, found me this next story. And actually, I forgot to mention this, but this is actually Eves Jeffcoat's last episode helping us with Nine Things. So we should take a second to thank her.
That's right. She's going to be helping launch and shape some new shows here at How Stuff Works, which will be a lot of fun. But anyway, you were saying?
Yeah. So Eves found this story about the Nature Mobile. It was invented in 2009. And basically, it's a Flintstones car, but it's powered by a horse.
Like a carriage or what?
Kind of. So here's a description. Basically, this Iranian engineer put a horse on a treadmill, and he put this treadmill inside a box on wheels. So basically, the driver and the passenger are sitting up front, the horse in the back, and to get it to move, you switch the treadmill on and wait for the horse to just start trotting. And I don't understand anything about this.
Yeah, this is very confusing.
Why wouldn't you just ride a horse instead?
Yeah, that's a good question.
But it's got 20 gears. It goes up to 28 miles per hour. And like an electric car, the movement and the brakes kind of recharge the treadmill's battery. For anyone who's concerned about the horse, though, and I do think we should all be concerned for this horse, the engineer wants to assure you that he spent more than 2 years adding things on to make the horse comfortable. So apparently there's this cold water jacket that gets applied to the horse so it doesn't overheat. There's a bag that collects the horse's emissions, as he puts it, and it cleanly stores the waste under the treadmill. And there are actually photos of this thing in The Guardian. It is completely transparent, so people can see the horse, and it's kind of beautiful, actually, but it isn't made for roads and highways. It's supposedly more of a way to get around villages, which, you know, brings me back to the same original point. Like, why don't you just ride the horse?
Yeah, I'm not sure why this one didn't take off. This is a really interesting idea. But all right, well, here's a crazy one I just learned about, and it's more of a way to soup up your car, but it's called the Ballster, and it was designed by this engineer named Charles Fourey in South Africa. And the Ballster was a way to protect yourself against carjackings, which were happening with some frequency in Johannesburg at the time that this was created.
So tell me, what does the Ballster do?
Well, just wait. For only $700, you'd get a pair of nozzles that pointed out from underneath your car. And if you felt unsafe, you could hit this small foot button, you'd hit the gas pedal, and then massive flames would shoot out from under your car. So it's basically a flamethrower for your car for only $700, Mango.
So do they sell well?
Despite that very reasonable price, in my opinion, apparently not. Just a few hundred of these things were sold, and the company unfortunately went out of business. And supposedly there are still a few cars in South Africa that have these things attached to them, though. So just a warning to any would-be carjackers in Johannesburg who also happen to listen to Part-Time Genius.
That's good to know, and I'm glad you were thinking about them. So have you seen those bikes in Panama that are completely kitted out?
I don't think so.
So they're just like bicycles, and this idea of the Ballster just reminded me of them because they have these outrageous modifications on them. Like, they've got sirens and air horns and boom boxes. Some have like vending stalls in front of them, giant sculptural artworks. It's really amazing. But, you know, I could see some of these having flamethrowers as well.
Yeah, they need to take it to the next level. All right. So where do you want to go from here?
So how about covering a guy named Houdina, which I know sounds like Houdini, but it is not. Though it is equally magical.
Oh, so good.
In 1925, this guy, Francis Houdina, designed a driverless car. And this is in 1925. Basically, he had an antenna on top and a second car behind the driverless car maneuvering it. So you could, like, blow the horn, switch gears, turn the wheel, all from the second car. And while this doesn't seem that amazing now, in 1925, it was obviously a huge deal. And so there's some New York Times reporting on it, and this is their quote. It was as if a phantom hand were at the wheel. So they were pretty enamored with it. And very smartly, Houdina sat in the passenger seat of this driverless car the first time his ghost car took a drive, just in case he needed to take the wheel. And apparently, he definitely needed to take the wheel. So here's what Jalopnik says about it and the first ride through New York City. Quote, the radio car careened from left to right, down Broadway, around Columbus Circle and south on Fifth Avenue, almost running down two trucks and a milk wagon, which took to the curbs for safety.
Gosh.
At 47th Street, Houdina lunged for the steering wheel, but could not prevent the car from crashing into the fender of an automobile filled with cameramen. It was at 43rd Street that a crash into a fire engine was barely averted. The police advised Houdina to postpone his experiments.
So what happened then? Like, did the car ever go into production?
I mean, I guess Houdina kept working on improvements and taking his car on tour. There's this report from Virginia in the 30s. It called the car one of the most amazing modern spectacles the people had ever seen. And this car keeps quietly surfacing in other places. But I do think, like, World War II and the drying up of funds might have put a damper on that research.
I still can't get over this name. Like, this magical car is invented by somebody named Houdina. But is there, what you're saying, there's no relation to Houdini?
So that's what I thought initially. And then I looked more into it. And apparently there's a story there too. So apparently Harry Houdini hated Houdina. And he stormed into the Houdina company and tried to get them to change their name. And it wasn't just because he thought they were infringing on his name to sell this possessed car. It was more because he was irritated that his mail was actually ending up at the wrong address. Like, he was just baffled that the mail was going to the wrong place, and he was upset about it. So in the end, he was just really annoyed that he couldn't make the Houdina company disappear.
All right, well, speaking of remote control cars, did you realize they actually use remote control cars in the Olympics during the track and field events?
No, I never heard that.
And apparently this has been happening since at least the 2008 Olympics, but obviously the worst part of shot put, javelin, and the hammer throwing is having to go retrieve your shot put, javelin, or hammer, and the remote control cars can do just that. They're these beautiful and apparently very pricey little vehicles, and one thing they aren't, though, is self-driving. So a track official guides the car to the javelin to be picked up for this very official reason. And when one shot putter said she wanted to buy one and hoped to test drive it on the field, the official said it was too expensive to let her take it for a spin.
I mean, that's so ridiculous. It's just a remote control car. But I mean, is there one auto manufacturer or like toy company who's responsible for making these?
There might be, but the Olympic rules actually prevent any logos or sponsorship. So even though one set of RCs looked a little bit like Mini Coopers and another looked like pickup trucks, no one really knows who makes them.
Oh, that's pretty fun. Well, you know, I know we've got two more facts to go, but before we get to them, let's take a quick break.
Welcome back to Part-Time Genius, where we're talking cars. So I was trying to figure out what my last fact should be, and I've got a bunch of short ones and honestly just can't pick among these, Mango.
So, you know, my take with this is always just to reel them off.
All right. Well, here are some of the things that I just thought were so interesting. Jaguar cars used to be called SS cars, but changed their name because of the Nazi association.
Really? Why?
Yeah, apparently they used to specialize just in motorcycle sidecars. So the original name of the company was Swallow Sidecar Company. That's where the SS comes from. But in the 40s, they changed their name for obvious reasons.
Yeah, that makes sense. What else you got?
Well, Mazda had to recall cars once because of spiders. Apparently they recalled about 100,000 M6 sedans because yellow sack spiders love the smell of the gasoline so much that they'd climb into the engines and block a vent with the webs that they'd weave, which sounds impossible, but I guess it's true. So they actually had to recall them twice. But I think my favorite story I stumbled into is about the La Marquise, and it's a car from 1884. It was created for the Count de Dion, and basically it's a steam car, and it runs on coal, wood, and bits of paper, and it takes the car about half an hour to really rev up, but then it can actually cruise at about 38 miles an hour. And you should note the verb in the tense that I use there, that's can cruise, because even though the car won the world's first automobile race back in 1887, it was last sold in 2011 for $4.6 million and apparently has the distinction of being the oldest known running automobile.
Oh, that's really cool that it still runs. You know, I actually had a story about Sarah Koenig and her dad, who supposedly wrote the super famous Volkswagen Lemon newspaper ads. You know, it's a great bit of Mad Men history. But I actually want to save that story. It's so good for another time and just give you today's trophy.
Man, what a tease you're leaving us with. That is a good one, though. We'll have to get to that. Well, thank you so much. Thanks again to Eves for all her wonderful facts. We wish her the best of luck, but we're excited to see everything she does here at How Stuff Works. And as always, thanks so much for listening. We'll be back with a full-length episode tomorrow.